This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 413 for March 16th of 2018. We have a winner, a catskin winner. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outofline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Out of Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Out of Line After Hours. My co-host, Gary Vasilash, is not here today. He's out traveling. But I got a couple of other really good partners in crime that are going to help us out on the show today, starting with Mike Austin from Hagerty.
Glad to be here again.
Great to have you here. And you're Hagerty editorial. You're not here to sell insurance.
No, we're here to celebrate driving and
all right.
Talk about that.
And we've also got Jason Fogelson from ReviewGarage.com. And Jason, thank you for being here. Your first time on the show.
My first time on as a guest.
Yeah. Here, yes. Well, if you pass the test, you'll be back again.
So. Excellent.
But it's good to have you here.
Thank you.
But our special guest right now is Tim Clyde. He's the CEO of a company called Catskin. And Tim, good to have you here, obviously.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
And so in a nutshell, what is Catskin?
Well, in a nutshell, we think about it like this. If you look at mid-market vehicles, so non-luxury brands, more than 60% of them come with a cloth seat. But 90% of people want a leather-trimmed interior or a leather interior. So we give people an opportunity to upgrade to the luxury, comfort, and durability of a beautiful custom leather interior at a price that's more affordable than they probably realize, and in a way that they can customize it in almost endless ways. When we talk about the amount of materials that we have available, the amount of customization is huge.
Very interesting. And where do you do this customization?
Well, we do this in a couple places. First of all, if you're a consumer and you want to go get something, first thing you got to do is figure out what you want to do. So you can go to a new car dealer and you can ask about Catskin. You can go to one of our authorized restylers, or you can call us or come to our website. And then once you pick an interior and want to have it done, we custom manufacture it at our factory.
Mm-hmm. So how many dealers do you have, all across the country or what?
Well, because we don't always complete that sale, we don't always know the data, but we're probably available in at least 75% of the franchise dealers across the country. Some sell it more aggressively than others, like with many accessory categories, but I'm in probably at least three-quarters of the dealerships across the country. You could go in and ask for Catskin.
That's probably like 10,000 dealerships then.
It's thousands and thousands, absolutely.
Jason, you're actually a customer, right? You're telling me you've got a Catskin interior.
I have a 2012 Mazda 3 that you guys did for me, and I have to say it's better than stock. We went from a cloth interior to a leather interior with perforated leather and heating and cooling.
Yeah.
And my wife just loves it.
Yeah. So why'd you do it? Why'd you make the decision?
Well, we actually wanted leather when we bought the car, but we didn't want all the additional features. We didn't want the navigation. We didn't want the complete package. And so we bought the lower trim level and then upgraded what we wanted.
Is that what most of your customers do, Tim?
Well, yeah, most of our product today is sold at the time you're buying either a new or a used vehicle. And that's exactly the value story. You go into a dealership, I'm buying a car, and usually the increase to go from a mid-trim level to the higher trim level, the luxury trim level, is $4,000 or $6,000. You get into a bigger truck and SUV, it might be $8,000 or $10,000, which is a lot of money. And there are people that want to say, shoot, I really just want the leather interior, and this is a way for them to do that. And you can get into our interior for somewhere between $1,500 and $2,200, depending on the size of the vehicle and depending on what customization features you choose.
Mm-hmm. So do you customize yours, Jason?
My wife picked out the trim. She's got piping on it that matches the exterior color of the car. It's a black seat with blue piping. Looks great. And you also did the door panels.
Right. So, and it must be perforated, too,
yeah,
which is a decorative trim element. But with the seat heating and cooling, you need to have it perforated so that the seat cooler works properly.
I've heard audio engineers say that perforated leather, they prefer, it actually creates less bounce.
Is that right?
For music. I mean, the audio engineers get down to that level of detail, and they actually prefer perforated leather. They say it, as long as nobody's sitting in the seat. If somebody's sitting in the seat, it doesn't make any difference. You know, they're blocking all that.
Right.
But, yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. That's another selling point.
There you
go. And perforation has really emerged as a design trend. If you go and look at what the OEMs have rolled out over the last couple of years, you've seen a lot more perforated interiors. And you've seen a lot more pattern stitching, too. You know, the diamonds, double diamonds, that sort of stuff, which is a trend. And we now have available, too.
Do you guys use CNC sewing machines? I mean, because some of these diamond patterns I've seen, especially like in Bentleys, they're very complicated stitches.
Yeah, so it's a great question. And we always say that we marry some sort of old traditional hand craftsmanship with modern new technology. We still hand inspect our leather. Most of our interiors are still hand sewn, especially if you think about the complexity of some of those curves. Where the automation comes in is when you make a pattern, it's all scanned in and digitized, and it drives high-tech digital cutting machines. And then the pattern stitching for those diamonds and double diamonds is all automated CNC equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So from a process perspective, you mentioned the patterns. You're basically, you know, it's a new seat cover, so you don't need to, I mean, in terms of, you don't need to stock it necessarily. You can make it to order, or, you know, you can go back years and years, as long as you guys have the pattern and make a seat for any car, really, right?
Yeah, so the way our business works is when a vehicle's released new, we quickly create a set of patterns so that we're in business to make whatever people want. And over time, typically, we end up doing two things. Higher volume stuff, we make standard items and put it in inventory so we can ship it faster. So think about high-selling vehicles available in black or gray. But more than half of what we do is customized, unique to what somebody happens to order. It might be combinations of different colors. It might have unique perforations. It might have other trim elements. You know, we can add camouflage. We can add tooled saddle leather. We can add carbon fiber. We can add a million different things for you. And it all happens on very fast turnaround. We're a mass customization business. You can take all that customization. We take your order today. We will cut it tonight, and we will ship it tomorrow by 6 p.m.
I did a factory tour and watched as an interior went from the order all the way to the shipping. I was there most of the day, but I got to watch this one piece of seat go from start to finish. It was fascinating.
So you build to order? You don't just make a whole bunch of stuff and stock it?
Well, it's a little bit of both. We have some that we make for stock, high sellers, top-selling vehicles, standard colors, blacks and grays.
What's your best-selling vehicle? I mean, you know.
In Detroit, should I answer that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
F-150 is our number one seller.
Oh, no kidding.
Silverado's number two, Ram's number three, Wrangler's number four, RAV4's number five. You know, we're the business, as you know, in new cars has trended toward trucks and SUVs, and we even index higher. We're probably 75% trucks and SUVs right now.
Okay, what if one of the guys that Haggerty is writing articles about some beautiful car, selling the insurance, let's say some guy's got a 30-year-old Jaguar, and he says, I want a leather interior, but I want it just like it was originally. Do you do that?
We don't do luxury vehicles, and we don't do a lot of really old classic stuff. Think about our library is anything that came out with factory cloth going back to about the mid-1990s. So you think about all your Chevys, Fords, Fiat Chrysler vehicles, Hyundai, Kia, Toyota, Nissan, Honda, etc. But we're not going to have Jag. We're not going to have Mercedes, BMW, that sort of thing.
Okay. Hey, we got a question here from Dan Albert that just came in. He says, ooh, a new interior. Will they do a 10-year-old minivan full of chewing gum and the old odd old sock?
We will. We specialize in that. One of the neat opportunities in this business is a lot of our current product is sold at the time you buy a vehicle. But there's a lot of people that currently own vehicles, right, 260 million. And nothing will really upgrade a vehicle like replacing that cloth interior. And so he mentioned, chewing gum and a sock?
Yeah.
We specialize in torn interiors, spilled coffee, kids, dogs, that sort of stuff that can really ruin an interior. And especially if the outside of the car and maybe some of the interior plastics are in pretty good shape, you upgrade to a custom leather interior, and that car not only looks new, it smells new.
Do dealers turn to you guys at all to help spiff their used cars by putting a new interior? Or is that too much money to put into a used car?
No, used car is probably about 20% of what we do. So if you think about franchise dealers that are selling new and used, we have a heavy selling focus through our sales team and our restyling partners to focus on the used car side of a car dealership. It's a great value add for everybody in the chain, right? Think about somebody going in to buy a car. I'm buying something that's 2-3 years old. What's it called? Certified pre-owned now.
And, right.
You know, it's really in pretty good shape. The one thing that's going to make it really like new is a new interior. So a great deal for a consumer. And it's another add-on for a dealer to sell.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned you're doing OE stuff that you can order, what, from Mopar was one of the ones that you mentioned? Talk a little bit about that. I'm fascinated that the OEMs would actually let you do business, taking business from them potentially.
Yeah. Well, we like to think of it as it works alongside their business. But, yeah, we work very closely with Mopar and Fiat Chrysler. Yeah. And we're available as part of the Mopar Custom Shop, which means that a dealer can order a Ram or a Wrangler, and they can add certain custom trim elements to it, including a leather interior. And the way that works is they actually make the truck, drive it around the corner to a second stage shop that puts in things like a spray-in bed liner or adds a leather interior, that sort of thing. And that's where they add our product. Ships out to the dealer already customized. Catskin's listed on the Monroney label. And so the Wrangler that we saw earlier is an example of something that you can buy through the Mopar Custom Shop.
Very interesting. And so that would come with a full factory warranty, too?
Absolutely, yes.
That's what I find fascinating, because, Jason, you were saying you thought the leather in your Mazda 3 would be better than anything you could get from the factory.
Yeah, no, I think in a lot of cases what they do is better than what's offered from the factory.
Because, as you guys know, automakers have got to make sure that this stuff is going to last forever, right?
Right.
So no UV, ultraviolet degradation, you know, wear and tear. You know, a lot of times, a lot of these leathers no longer feel like leather or certainly don't smell like leather anymore. How do you work around that issue, Tim?
Well, so we spend a lot of time on the materials that we put into the product. Very high-quality materials tested to automotive standards. We go through very extensive testing with Fiat Chrysler. We do all their seat level testing, and you mentioned the abrasion resistance and the UV, and I think there's 60 or 70 tests that we have to pass. But we also spend a lot of time selecting our level. We have leather. We have experts that go to Brazil a couple times a year and spend time at the tannery, make sure we get very good selection of hides.
That's where you get your leather, Brazil?
That's where we get our leather. And we do that in part because it needs to uphold the rigorous standards of automotive use. But at the same time, you want it to feel right. You want it to look right. You want it to smell right. And so that's a real art that we're trying to pursue. And so we have real good experts that help us do that.
Uh-huh. Are you only in the U.S.?
Yeah, we pretty much sell in the U.S. and Canada, principally because of our pattern library. So the way the seats are architected in the U.S. is different than Europe or anywhere else in the world, and because of that, our patterns work in the U.S. So right now, U.S. and Canada.
One of the reasons I'm asking is that different regions of the world like their leather to smell differently.
Yeah.
And I remember when Lexus launched, they had done an extensive research into all various kinds of things. And one of the things that they found is that Japanese consumers, or at least at the time when Lexus launched, preferred a leather, honest to God, that smelled fishy, whereas Americans wanted their leather to smell like baseball gloves.
Right.
And do you find any variation here in the U.S. of what kind of smell people are looking for?
You know, we don't find variation on the smell that people are looking for, other than they want that real leather smell, that baseball glove, however you want to describe it, because it not only smells like leather, but it smells like new. Mm-hmm. Right, it smells like I've got something new in the car. So,
do you have any different levels of leather? I mean, if you look at the wide range of new cars out there, right,
and
especially even if you consider trucks, you've got, you know, thicker, heavy, the stuff that feels heavier duty, it's going to wear better versus something that might be softer and, you know,
right,
maybe more pleasing, but you go, well, this isn't going to last. Do you offer that kind of range as well?
Yeah, so we have, first of all, in our premium leather, we have tons of variety from colors. We do blacks, grays, tans, all the way up to yellows, reds, greens. We have a pink. And we do all sorts of specialty materials, whether it's camo, carbon fibers, tooled saddle leather, et cetera.
Camo leather?
Well, it's a... Let me come back to that.
Okay, yeah,
it's not exactly leather.
Sorry to interrupt, but go ahead.
But that's available in our regular line. That's a premium leather to begin with, but we offer an even higher line called Tuscany, which is a richer, smoother, more supple feel. All of it engineered to automotive requirements, but it's more expensive and it's a very elegant leather. But I tell people, you know, for most people, they're not leather experts. They just know a nice interior when they see it. And our regular premium leather is a fantastic choice. And it is available in camo. It's technically not a leather. So there's probably no secret in the industry that when you buy a mid-market vehicle and it says a leather-trimmed interior, there are parts of that seat from an OEM that are leather and parts that are engineered material that looks a lot like leather. So we use some of that engineering to create some of the camos and some of the faux alligators and even some of the brighter neon colors, the lime greens and some of those things that are very hard to do in a leather. But we have a lot of leather colors, too.
So in the places, the real leather, I got to believe, is placed where you're going to touch it.
Right.
And probably the faux leather is stuff lower part of the seat that you may not even see.
Yeah. So typically a leather-trimmed interior means that where you're sitting, so the face of the seat or even the insert areas is going to be leather, and the wrap, the sides and the back of the seat are probably more going to be some sort of engineered material. And part of that is just to its cost. Leather's a lot more expensive. But the other part of it is installation. You know, some of those things actually install and are a little more malleable when you're trying to fit that to a seat frame. And they're pretty rugged and durable. So in some of those areas where you don't need the feel and comfort of the leather, it's actually more durable to have some non-leather materials in there.
We got another question here from Miro Keffert. I hope I pronounced that right. Any plans to do Alcantara?
You know, that's a good question. I can't give away too many secrets other than I can tell you we already have a line of suedes, and we are looking at some premium suedes.
Interesting. You know, the CEO of Alcantara was just here in Detroit yesterday.
That I heard, yes. We thought that was ironic. My marketing team's going to kill me. They always get nervous when I come on and start talking, but we are looking at some premium suedes.
Okay, we don't want to have you give away too much.
What's in terms of things that you've seen become more popular in the last few years, what's the most surprising trend or color you've seen?
Well,
lime green, you just mentioned. Geez, I can't believe that. Yeah,
you know, I don't know if it's surprising. In a minute, I could tell you of some of the most interesting products I've seen on the factory floor. But I think some of the most surprising trends have been, yeah, some of the bold, vibrant colors. We have a very bright, vibrant red that we call Salsa. We have two greens. One of them matches the, I think Chrysler's is called Sublime. They use, and it's a Challenger color and some others. And, you know, we've got suedes in orange. We have a suede in pink. And believe it or not, those colors are used. I've seen an all-pink interior on the factory floor one day. I think one of the more interesting trends over the last 12 months, I'm going to say, is all this pattern stitch that I mentioned earlier. We've seen a big proliferation of use of diamonds and double diamonds as an embroidery accent in the insert or wings area. And you've probably seen it a lot in designs and luxury cars and things. But we're bringing that to the mid-market. And you can take almost any catskin interior and add it to either the wing area or the insert area and get a nice kind of accent item to that seat. I wouldn't recommend doing it on the whole seat. It's a little much. But in some of the accent areas, it's quite a nice look.
Hey, we've got a phone call here. Carmen, let's bring in Jeff, who's asking about stuff that relates to this.
Hi, Jeff calling from Hudson, Ohio. A big fan of your show. Hey, I want to know, why does it seem like car companies are punishing me for not getting the high-quality interior? It seems like the base model interior never matches the door panels and dashboard of the car. Case in point, my 2012 Scion IQ. Why is it that they don't do a better job of incorporating the look of the interior on a base model? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Jeff. You got anything to add to that?
Well, I'm not going to speak on behalf of the OEMs.
Yeah.
I will say on behalf of our company, what we try to do is make sure that the colors that we're using inside the vehicle, in the interior, actually match the plastic colors. And so if you go and look at our color card, we have multiple shades of black, believe it or not. We have multiple shades of dark gray. We have multiple shades of light gray. We have multiple shades of tan. And the reason we do is because everybody's gray or dark gray or whatever is slightly different. And so anytime we're designing an interior, part of that design is to recommend to say, out of our 14 different gray colors, pick this one because it matches the plastics inside your vehicle, or it does a better job of matching the interior and the plastics. Mm-hmm. So I'll answer it on behalf of CATSKIN. I'm not going to answer it on behalf of the OEM.
No, I don't blame you for not taking that. I would add this for Jeff, though. Boy, the cost pressures in today's industry are so intense. And sometimes people get into a car and go, oh, it's all hard plastic. Well, yeah, if you want nice soft touch surfaces and painted surfaces and coated surfaces and wrapped ones, you're going to pay a lot more for it.
I think he said he had a Scion IQ, which was a $13,000 car at the time, I think.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of room for design work in that interior.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we all want, you know, the nicest going, but it's hard to hit a low price point and be able to do that. Okay, we got another. Jim Walsh wants to know, Tim, which is your favorite interior?
Well, my favorite interior is probably the one that's in my car.
Which is?
Well, since I'm in Detroit, I'm not going to say. It's a midsize SUV from one of the Detroit Three, but I have a beautiful black wrap. I mentioned our Tuscany, our higher-end line of materials. I use that leather with a rich brown face. So it's a black vehicle, black interior. I use a black wrap with a beautiful rich brown face, so a two-tone black and brown, perforated on the inserts, and then a contrasting stitch that kind of shows off some of that brown color. I will also say one of my favorites right now, I don't know if I'd put it in my car, but one of my favorites is a black wrap with a lime green interior with a dark patterned diamond stitch on it.
Oh, interesting.
I've seen that in the factory. In fact, we saw that with the Ram the other day. We had one of those. It's a very unique color assortment. It would have to be just right for the individual.
I failed to mention, Jim Walsh, who just asked that question, went on to say, I'm a big fan of the camo, but my wife would kill me.
Well, I would say then make a subtle choice. I don't know what he's driving, but there are different ways that you could use it just in a wing, just in an insert. It's a small amount of camo. Most of the interior would be a beautiful set of materials in black or something like that. So there is a subtle way you can do it.
Use it as an accent.
Use it as an accent. Mm. In fact, some of the times what's really interesting is people will use it as part of a package. So you might have a black wrap, use some camo as just the wings or the inserts, so you got an accent. And then some folks, on occasion, we make packages where we put little decals together where either a horizontal or vertical band on the bed of a truck, you can put the camo pattern on there. So you have, say you've got a white or black truck, you've got a subtle camo graphic on the outside, you've got subtle camo accents on the interior, and it looks great. But yeah, for marital bliss, I definitely don't recommend doing an entire camo interior.
That's great. Let's see, we got a couple of others here. MEC said he'd love to be able to purchase a new set of leather for their 65 Lincoln convertible.
Unfortunately, we don't do that one.
Okay.
If you go back to about the mid-90s,
that's about it.
Mid-market vehicles that came with, there are some older vehicles that we do and some luxury vehicles, but it's hit or miss. They're more specialty things that we've done. Particularly if somebody had 20 or 30 or 40 that they wanted to do, then we'd go ahead and do the pattern. But we have probably a library of 3,000 different vehicle patterns, and it's built from the mid-90s to now, and it's built around all the mid-market vehicles that came with factory cloth.
Gotcha. Okay, Bob Dylan wrote in. I don't think it's that Bob Dylan, but he's just got a comment. I like my leather to smell like a farm, or maybe scratch and sniff.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good idea. Yeah, we'll take that one.
And this is a good segue. Mark wrote in to say, can you pick my name? My current interior is just gross. And what he's getting at is, of course, and I'm sure everybody watching the show now knows, we've been going to hold a contest where you can win a free leather interior for your vehicle done by CATSKIN. We had about, I don't know, it was like 350-something or other people enter that contest. And we said it had to be a 2012 or newer vehicle. Right. And it could only be in the United States.
Right.
But I got to tell you, this is an amazing list of countries of how many people expressed an interest right. in this contest. From Australia, the United Kingdom, Romania, Japan, Netherlands, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, Spain, Germany, Switzerland, Sweden, Mexico, Lebanon, Denmark, El Salvador, and Israel. So you got some people out there in the world. Maybe you got to start looking at franchising outside of the United States.
Maybe we need to expand, I'd be interested in some of those viewers as to whether they have a U.S.-made vehicle in that country or whether it's something that they bought locally.
My guess is it's probably something they bought locally.
Yeah, huh.
But I don't know. But in any case, I was blown away that there was that much interest from outside the country, even though we limited it to people only in the U.S.
Well, we'll put them on a mailing list for the future.
Okay. Well, Tim, we're going to bring out a hat full of names.
Okay.
Here comes Jonathan, our intern, and you pick out a name and tell us who has won the contest. And I wish we had a drum roll and a trumpet.
All right. The grand winner here is William Tomczyk from Rio Rico, Arizona.
All right.
So congratulations, William.
Bravo, bravo. And one other thing before you go and we wrap the segment up, what are these little cows you brought into the, it says CATSKIN on it.
These are a little promotional item that we do every year, usually around the SEMA show, but we also give them away to a lot of our customers and consumers. It's just a promotional item that we typically do a theme. I think last year it was Boris Kowloff. I think the year before that it was Sandy Koufax. It was a baseball themed cow. Yeah, so there's usually a fun theme built around a cow that we use as a promotional item.
Oh, that's fun. That's good. Tim, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks so much for working with us to do this contest. It's been really amazing to see the interest in it. And like I said, not just in the U.S., but from all over the world, in fact. So.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. I enjoyed the conversation and enjoyed being on. It was great to be here.
Good deal. We're going to take a quick commercial break right now. We're going to give a shout out to our friends at Bridgestone. Okay, we're back. So pretty interesting. And serendipity, had no idea, Jason, that you had actually had a CATSKIN interior.
Yeah, we love it. You forgot to ask him how many cats they use per interior. I'd be curious to find that out.
And do Hagerty customers get CATSKIN interiors, or do they want to go for the original?
You know, I don't know, but some of them are going to want to go for the original, but you have to remember that popular cars, you know, like the Mustang or even Chevelle or even like Corvairs, there's still tens of thousands left, right? So you're not going to, you might not spend all the money to do the original, or you know that you can, if someone wants to do the original later, they can do it, but if you're starting from the ground up and you have a limited budget, or you just say, look, I want this thing to look good and run.
Yeah.
It makes total sense.
Totally does. Well, hey, let's talk about what's been going on in the industry. And the three of us this morning were at a big press conference the Ford Motor Company had to kind of spill its guts about some of its future product coming out. Unfortunately, the best stuff, they told us, is off the record. They'll cut our heads off if we talk about that. But overall, Mike, what was your impression of the morning?
Overall is good. I liked their focus, and you know, Hackett presented five
when
main.
You say
pillars.
Focus, not the focus car.
No,
yeah.
That was one of the sad parts. Was I think they said like 80 or 86% of the portfolio of the sales are going to be SUVs.
SUVs, crossovers, and pickups.
Right. So you know, cars seem to be slipping away, which is it's a response to the market. But as a fan of cars, it's a little sad. But otherwise, I thought that those five pillars that he laid out and a lot of the general ideas of the other big one is they're moving away from the idea of a platform and just saying we're going to have front drive unibody, rear drive unibody, trucks, battery electrics, just, you know.
And commercial.
Overall architectures.
Yeah. Jason, what was your reaction?
I thought it was interesting that, you know, he laid out that there was kind of a gang of 10 who were responsible for the decision making at the company right now. And it didn't feel like that group included a lot of creatives. I think maybe
more business people.
More business people, yeah. To use the pejorative, bean counters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hope that that doesn't mean that we're looking at an unexciting future for Ford. But right now, it's looking very prosaic.
Yeah, and you know, going to back to your point, Mike, of how in just a few years' time, at least in the U.S. market, 86% of everything they sell is going to be a truck. I thought they would announce today which models of cars they're axing, and they didn't announce any of that. So, you know, and I just look at the sales figures, right? So I'm figuring Fiesta, gone. Focus, gone. C-Max, gone. Yeah. Taurus, gone. Flex, gone. But they didn't announce any of that. And I was expecting them to. And then I thought later, well, your expectations were a little too high, John, because they've got those cars in showrooms right now. I mean, what a kiss of death to say, come out and say, hey, we're dropping all those. I mean, it would kill the sales of them. You know, their pricing would collapse. So I guess I kind of understand that. Even though I'm sure I'm right, they didn't announce that today.
They rarely hold a press conference to announce negatives.
Yeah.
They didn't mention, for instance, their recent recall.
Yeah. 1.4 million vehicles, right?
Kind of big news.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was not mentioned today.
All right. So other thoughts about the Ford stuff?
Well, I mean, for me, the big news was, like you said, most of it was off the record, but they let out teaser images of a few cars, and one was the Bronco, which...
Tell the audience how they unveiled the Bronco.
Oh, yeah. So they have all of the cars in this big...
So there were eight vehicles
under... All under wraps on the periphery. We're in a design dome. Like, it's a big... Normally, when they're not hosting people, they go in and they can have different lighting conditions, and you can step back and get a really good look at cars they're working on to evaluate the design. So they have those all around the edge. And, you know, they pull the cover off the cars, and they pull the cover off the Bronco, and it has a form-fitting cover on top of it. So they didn't really show us anything.
I thought that was funny. You know, here they're showing us all the stuff coming, and they pull the wraps off the Bronco, and it's still covered up. And they said, ooh, this one's a little too close to actually hitting the market. We're not going to show you today.
Yeah, and so for me, you know, the big guess was, is this just going to be an SUV version of the Ranger? Is it going to be retro? Is it going to be new? And they've been on record saying it's not going to be a retro play, but almost upright windshield, flat hood, big square proportions like the original Bronco.
Like so, the originals. True to the original.
Yeah, so to me that was kind of a relief. Like, okay, they're not going to screw up what, you know, is clearly a fundamental thing they should be doing when they bring the Bronco back.
Yeah.
It was interesting to try and parse some of what they said. They mentioned off-roading as a heritage of the brand, and I'm not sure I quite agree. When I think off-roading, I don't generally think Ford.
Right.
But
the only thing I could say is for Bronco, original Bronco, yes. You know, they used to race those in the Baja 1000. You know, Parnelli Jones used to race a Bronco down in Baja. So from that aspect, I buy in. But you're right. I don't think of off-roading when I think Ford.
I mean, they also mentioned comfort. And if you've driven a first-gen Bronco, that's not part of the proposition.
Well, between Bronco and Raptor, what was there?
Yeah.
Not much.
Not much at all. That's right. And then most of the other stuff was things that they had talked about before, you know, streamlining the business, you know, limiting the number of different builds, you know, all the option lists, trying to get that all streamlined.
I was sitting next to Tony Swan, who's a journalist that we all know, and he made the observation, how many employees did you see in the photos of those factories? They were very heavy on robotics, and those factories of the future did not look like places for human beings.
Yeah, or not as many, right?
But it was interesting too because they called them collaborative robots.
Yeah,
you know, it was very careful to pose it as this is working alongside people, not replacing people, despite what the photo might show.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly right. So I don't know. I'm glad I went. I especially appreciated the off-the-record stuff of seeing future product. We in the media always love to see future product. But I don't know, did they do enough to convince people that Ford's future is bright?
I mean, I think in a 5 to 10 year term, yes. And Hackett talked about, you know, we're looking all the way out and we're looking near, and then there's sort of this in-between that's a vague space, and we try to look at all three at the same time. But everyone talks about this advanced mobility and this transformative piece, and nobody's quite sure how our cities are going to transform. The cars, the technology is coming into the cars. The technology will be there for infrastructure, whether or not governments spend money on it. But, when we're going to see that transformation is kind of up in the air. At best, I would say they won't get blindsided by it. They're at least looking. So,
yeah.
Good.
I was kind of fascinated that in the previous press conferences over the last couple of years with Ford, there's been a real heavy emphasis on autonomous driving. And there was almost no mention of it today.
Right. Barely mentioned it.
No. So I'm not sure if that's a shift of focus. As you said, they're looking at now, at 24 months from now, and at the far future. Whether this focus on the near future isn't really on autonomous driving, it's on getting their manufacturing house in order. But it was interesting how little was said about that.
Yeah. Another key point, too, that they brought up is how they're going to go hybrid on everything. So, yeah, they're going 86% crossovers, SUV, trucks, but they made the point that even if gas prices go up, here's how we're going to protect ourselves. My question now is mild hybrid, strong hybrid. They mentioned plug-in, but, what's going to be the mix here? And I just wonder how well a hybrid pickup is going to work, unless it's a mild hybrid.
They mentioned that, there'll be a generator on board. So there's, and actually that goes back to the GM two-mode hybrid that had a AC power in the bed. But, you wondered the same things about aluminum. You wondered the same things about the V6 turbo. It seems to have worked out. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. Because they really did make V6s work in pickups. I think it's what, like 60-70% of the mix now is the EcoBoost engine.
Now, I remember when they announced the EcoBoost maybe, 10-12 years ago? They held a further with Ford and brought us in and said, the future of this industry is 2-liter turbo engines. And we all looked at each other and went, nah, never going to happen. And now, here we are.
Sure
2-liter turbo engine is the dominant configuration, not just for them, but for many manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's foolish to discount what they say because they do seem to have a handle on it.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't discount that. I'm just curious how pickup buyers would react, not to a mild stop, like Chrysler's doing. Like on this Jeep Wrangler, you can get what they call e-torque, which is a stop start with a certain amount of electric boost to it. But, to go to a strong hybrid system a la Prius and apply that kind of thinking to a pickup, I'm not convinced yet pickup buyers would go for it.
I agree with you there in that, the pickup buyers are, I would guess they're sensitive to price on those sort of things. If you say, we're going to charge you $2,000 or $3,000 for this hybrid, they don't really care about fuel economy. Going back to the Turbo V6, they sold that and they said, look, here's the 400 horsepower option. They didn't go, here's the version that gets a little better fuel economy.
Yeah.
So if either a mild system or something they can sell on extra torque or extra capability.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Let's see here. We got some other things coming up soon. New York Auto Show. There's a lot of stuff getting deliberately leaked out. Jason, what are you looking for at New York?
What I'm most excited about is the new Toyota RAV4. And the competitive set there as well. I think that the small crossover SUV is certainly the hottest market segment right now. And somebody's got to do something interesting rather than bring out another vehicle that looks just like everybody else's.
Yeah. What are you expecting? A refresh of the RAV4 or something really different?
The RAV4 is so successful.
Yeah.
That,
if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Toyota is not the kind of company that fixes unbroken things, correct?
Yeah.
So I expect a styling update. I expect an interior update, and I expect probably they'll announce new powertrains.
Mm-hmm. Mike, what are you looking for in New York?
I'm honestly a little bit behind on it, but I would say I'm interested in the new Altima. That's one thing I do know. And New York is typically this meat of the market kind of show, where you get a RAV4, you get a family sedan. I mean, Hyundai's shown the Sonata there before. I'm interested in what the Altima is going to look like. Lincoln is going to show another product as well. I think it's an SUV or a sedan. I forgot.
two new SUVs in New York is what they're saying. Now, I say SUV, you know, sometimes CUV, SUV gets all slurred together, so I'm not sure what. But, yeah, I'm intrigued. What could they possibly be bringing out? Is there going to be a Lincoln version of the Explorer, for example? And could there be a Lincoln version of the Echo Sport? I don't know. I'm really curious to see what they're going to have there.
This is a little inside baseball, but the thing that gets me about the shows now is there often are more debuts outside of the show in the evening than there are during the press conferences. There are precious few press conferences that matter at this show this year, but the parties at night are what they want you to go to. And personally, I hate that, but.
Yeah. Well, look, we got to take another quick break. We'll save that thought and come back to it because I think it's an important one. But right now, we're going to give a shout out to our friends at Lear.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Okay, we're back with Autoline After Hours. In fact, the control room just told me the winner of the Catskin contest just called us. Katie, well, let's bring in that phone call.
Hi, my name is Bill Tomczyk, and I just got a call from Katie telling me I'm the winner of the Catskin sheet covers. I can't believe it. I'm thrilled. I thank you very much. I'm in Rio Rico, Arizona. Love the show. Hi, guys.
Thank you, Rio Rico. That's great to hear. But, yeah, Jason, I want to go to back to the point that you had raised of increasingly automakers doing stuff not at the auto shows, doing it outside of the auto show. And I know one of the big reveals is going to be this new Cadillac XT4. I think I got that right.
Yeah.
Smaller crossover, right? And they're doing some big blowout at one of the...
And Volkswagen's showing a concept SUV outside of the show as well.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I think Audi's doing an event. I've been invited to more things than I could possibly attend, and they're not respectful of the journalist's time there either. They schedule against each other, so you have to make a choice: do I want to see this? Do I want to see that? It sort of defeats the purpose of going to an auto show
as a journalist.
Yeah,
to try and see everything.
Yeah, and I mean it's a little bit of this reminder too that. The auto in the way the auto shows have changed, that there are two auto shows. There's the one for the press where they're trying to get the news out. Then there's the one for people to show up and walk around. And it turns out that automakers are figuring out the best way, or maybe they don't have to show it at the building, just to get the press to cover it. And
that's
it
right.
Creates some headaches.
Yeah.
But, you know, you raise a good point because, yeah, as somebody covering the show, I want to see everything. And if you're doing different events in different parts of town, maybe you can get to two, you know. If you're in New York, though, trying to get across town from one event to another, impossible.
Not possible. No, and also I think the way we write about these things has changed a lot, too. You know, we're expected to file a story before the event has even happened, practically. You wind up writing a lot from press releases. You're not going to get a whole lot more than that by going to the press conference anyway, but at least you can see the car in person. And now, you know, there are several vehicles that I'm going to have to write about without ever having seen.
Man, yeah. No, that's not the way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a small downside in that, too, that you can't get you know, everyone's rushing, so you just get the thin surface version of the story without diving in.
Jason, jumping topics here. One of the topics you wanted to talk about is Fred Diaz.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Fred Diaz, and I just
Give a little bit of a history for those who haven't heard of him before.
Well, Fred was with Ram, and was considered one of the engineers of really the resurgence of the Ram brand, and I believe his title was CEO at the time. But that was at a time when they held multiple titles at that organization.
Yeah.
And then he went over to Nissan, and now he's been announced as CEO of Mitsubishi Motors.
Yeah, North America.
North America. And we were discussing whether that's a promotion or a demotion. and you felt that it was a promotion.
I think it's a promotion because even though he had a big sales job at Nissan, you know, Nissan Renault just recently bought Mitsubishi, took the Mitsubishi Motors over lock, stock, and barrel.
They became the Nissan Renault Mitsubishi Alliance.
Right. And so for Fred Diaz to be named as the CEO of Mitsubishi Motors America, I think is a big promotion for him. And in fact, the way I'm reading it is the people at Nissan really like Fred, and now they're grooming him. They're giving him this position where he's going to run the whole company, which is going to be more than just handling sales, although that'll be the big part of it. I think his future is bright. That, you know, I think he does his job right for a few years at Mitsubishi. If he can grow that, I think they'll give him Nissan North America or Nissan America at least.
I'd love to see that because I think the world of him, and I think it would be a great choice.
Yeah. Do you know him at all?
Yeah, I mean, I know him more from the Nissan days and the successes he had there. I would say it seems like trial by fire. I mean, you're taking Mitsubishi, which has not the most competitive product offering.
Oh, you are so kind.
They've been shrinking for a while. And so if you can turn that around, then, you know, he's a hero. You know, neutral, I guess you kind of go, well, look at what you gave me. But
it
will be interesting to see. And also... He's somebody who hasn't really had any public failures. So clearly somebody that can get things done and can make results. So
yeah,
I'd like to see more Mitsubishi.
I think Nissan stole him away from FCA because he was running Ram, as you said there, Jason. They were getting ready to relaunch the Titan, redo it, bring out a heavy-duty version, add a diesel. And it was like, hey, Fred, you've done it with Ram. Come on over here and do it for a Titan. And before that was even done, they said, hey, Fred, why don't you run all sales for us? And now they've thrown him into Mitsubishi, I think, because they've recognized this guy knows how to move the metal. He knows how to talk to dealers. He knows how to speak their language. And so I think that's why he was given Mitsubishi.
Well, it depends on how deeply you drink the Mitsubishi Kool-Aid about how you feel about this alliance. I happen to have drunk deeply, and I like the idea that there's going to be platform sharing that makes a lot of sense. There's going to be some sharing of the line where they're going to be able to build vehicles that share a platform. You know, a Mitsubishi down the line, and then a Nissan down the same line. Technologies that make sense. I think there's potentially a really bright future for Mitsubishi. But the only way it's going to happen is with a guy like Fred Diaz at the helm, making sure that they live up to their promises.
Well, to Mike's point, their product offering is mighty thin right now.
But it's good.
Well, it's okay. I think it's okay. But the point being is that as part of the alliance and all this platform sharing and everything, we're 2 to 3 years away from them getting really serious product. So how do you keep the franchise alive until then? You get somebody who really knows how to sell product, and that's why I think they turned to Fred Diaz for it. Okay, another topic. Is President Trump going to get us into a trade war? How's this going to impact the auto industry? What are your thoughts on that?
We're all looking at you, Mike.
Oh, I'll use my best McLaughlin Group knowledge from this. But, I mean... Are we going to get into a trade war? It seems fairly likely. I think the president especially, but maybe a lot of other people, don't realize how coordinated the auto industry is and how much everything comes from everywhere. So that's a huge problem. I mean, even wheels. They're talking about aluminum wheels. You know, that even affects the aftermarket. You want to buy, you know, you're going to put 10% on the wheels. So the interesting thing to me, though, is that everyone seems to agree that there's this problem with Chinese oversupply of steel, that they are, you know, they have to get rid of all of this extra metal because their factories are pumping it out, and that's hurting everyone. And there's no nuance in the tariff talk right now. They're not saying we're going to allow Chinese steel into a certain level, and then above that it's tariffed, or we're only going to look at China, or we're going to talk to our partners in Canada and the EU and figure it out. It's just, no, flat tariff right across the board. And that is a terrible way to start a trade war.
Yeah, right.
Well, trade wars are good, right?
The president said so himself.
The president said so. We, you know, there's always a winner in a trade war. It's difficult to get too worked up over anything you hear right now, only because we hear so many contradictory things and we hear them as if they're stated off the cuff. So you're not sure what's real, what's not real. I'm certain that at more impactful levels than journalism, at the industry level, that they're having the same difficulty. And they're not sure what to prepare for, what not to prepare for. So I think we're in a very tumultuous time, and I don't see that taming itself.
I would say, though, like the president has shown when it suits his interests or when his mind is able to be changed, he can find a reason to change it. When you look at guns, he said, well, it wasn't really politically reasonable to change the age for purchases. And this is the sort of thing where, you know, he could turn around and go, well, this was going to hurt U.S. jobs, and I'm about jobs, and whatever reason he needs to make it up to go back on what he said, it could very well happen.
Yeah,
depending on who gets his ear.
Yeah. My observation is the guy will say outlandish stuff, totally outlandish, and I think he uses that as a negotiating tactic. He comes in and says, I'm going to blow this whole thing up, then can back off from that. So let's see what actually happens.
You know, he's driving a speedboat, and these captains of industry are with ocean liners. And so it's very difficult to match that, the speed of direction change that he has the ability to make with an ocean liner. So we'll see.
Yeah. Hey, jumping topics yet again. We've got a few more phone calls that have come in here. And our regular Clem from Delmont, Pennsylvania has called in. Carmen, let's bring in that phone call.
This is Kleb Zorowski from Delmont, Pennsylvania. My question is, what's going to happen to these large oil companies if electric cars take over the whole system? What are they going to do with all this gasoline and motor oil? I don't think they're going to stand still to see this happen. They're going to have to do something. Maybe lower the price of gasoline down to where it's not feasible even to drive an electric car. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Cloud.
Wow, it's nice to see somebody looking out for those poor oil companies.
Yeah.
You know, they're so put upon.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the oil companies in their press releases and their news reports, they like to tout their diversification and you know, the ways they're looking at alternative energy. Some of that's greenwashing. Some of it's hedging their bets. They still make a ton of money on oil. But I'm still a little bit skeptical. We can get to, we have like, you know, 230 million-ish cars in the U.S. that, you know, we're going to get to scale on that with batteries. Batteries are a raw material intensive process. And, you know, even if we went right over to batteries, then you're going to come in, depending on how the chemistries change, you're going to come into shortages and maybe some feasibility limit there. So, but as the batteries come on, the price of oil goes down and then people buy more oil. So I don't know where it's going to go, but I think that the death of the internal combustion engine is maybe a little overhyped.
Greatly exaggerated. Right. The one thing that the oil companies do have a play on is if instead of going with batteries, we go with fuel cells. Because hydrogen is actually a byproduct of cracking oil. It's a byproduct of making fuel. So,
well, I have the solution for all of this.
All right. I'm glad we got you on the show, man.
Much in the way that Ford is no longer a car company, they're a mobility company. The oil companies should become energy companies. And then they could, you know, solve this whole thing with a press release.
Actually, a number of them already do call themselves energy companies.
Sure, there we go.
Hey, we got another phone call here. Carmen, let's bring that one in.
Hi, John and Gary and guests. This is Dale Leonard out of Cleveland, Ohio. My question is, with all the time and money that Ford spent engineering the Taurus for police use, why would they drop that vehicle from the line?
Well, thanks for the question, Dale. Look, the Taurus just isn't selling that well. I mean, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. I'm going to say maybe they're selling 40,000 a year. You know, yeah, they put a lot of money into making a police version of it. But to redesign the Taurus and come out with an all-new Taurus would be a minimum of $1 billion. So as a company that's got all these other pressures to invest in electrification and autonomy and expand into China and blah, 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 do you want to put $1 billion into a car that's going to give you lousy returns? I don't think they're going to do it.
My guess, too, is they figure they can replace those sales with the Explorer. I mean, you think of the average police officer, they're wearing a jacket, they're wearing a belt. They take up a lot of space inside the car, and they've already, you know, I think it's already been shown that they prefer SUVs with that extra space.
Yeah. Let's see. Mike from San Francisco has got a comment. He says, Cadillac president Johan de Nijssen appears to be speaking out of both sides of his mouth, as one day he gives an explanation on why sedan sales continue to flounder, and the following day he says that Cadillac will introduce the Escala sedan. I think Johan's not talking out of both sides of his mouth. I think that the Escala, if you guys remember that concept car they put out, drop-dead gorgeous, and it will be going into production in a couple of years. So, hey, look, not everything's going to go into SUVs and crossovers.
No, and there's still room for the sedan in the marketplace. You know, we're still talking about millions of vehicles every year that are not SUVs and trucks. So they have to continue to develop that product.
And, you know, if you look at the Escala, assuming it's a flagship, you know, that's where you're seeing the niche stuff. Taking sports cars as an example, you know, outside of Mustang, Camaro, Corvette, maybe Nissan 300, you know, 370Z, everything that's a sports car now is like above $75,000 because you need those kind of margins and you need those kind of prices to be able to sustain a 10,000 or less annual unit. And, you know, with the Escala, it's a similar play.
Yeah. I totally agree. Hey, what do you guys think of this announcement that Buick is going to take the Buick name off its cars and just use the badge, the Buick badge?
I mean, it's not as bad of a decision as the GM chiclet, but I think...
okay, explain the GM chiclet for those who don't know that.
So for, I guess it started in the mid-2000s, GM decided that they needed to have a unified brand across all of their different divisions. And so they would put a little postage stamp GM on each car, which was actually...
On the front fenders.
Yeah, but people that had a Cadillac didn't know or care that people that had a Chevy, or they didn't want to be associated with it.
Yeah.
And it was this nonsensical thing. So I would say this is the sort of thing you overthink, maybe, that it doesn't hurt to have Buick there. But, you know, was it doing you any harm? I don't think it was.
I think it's a designery choice. That minimalism is certainly a movement, and in that way, I would say it's a victory for designers. I don't know that it has any marketing impact, really, any at all.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking Audi, for example. You just see the rings, right? It doesn't say Audi on the
car.
Not
anymore.
I'm not even sure Mercedes says
Hyundai.
Mercedes
doesn't say Hyundai.
Yeah, interesting. So it's a way of decluttering the car a little bit. The question is, do people really know that Buick badge?
Does anybody really care?
Isn't that a song?
Yeah.
Well, with that, we're going to wrap up today's show. But Mike Austin, Jason Fogelson, thanks so much for coming on. Great to have the both of you here. And I'm glad you were here to witness the picking of the winner for the Catskin Interior.
Congratulations, William. Was that his name?
I think that's right, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So thanks, you guys, for being here.
Thank you.
And, of course, want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.